Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
This is Football Social Daily, keeping you up to date with the latest from the English top flight.
Hello and welcome to the Football Social Daily podcast. My name's Ant McGinley and this is the place where every day we bring you the latest Premier League news, or when we're on a bit of an international break, we look at those Premier League stars who have been turning it on at international level. And there's been a lot of focus on the World Cup, both qualifying and preparing for Qatar 2022. Last night, England took on Ivory Coast, which we will talk about in a moment. But the people who will probably be celebrating the most today will be Liverpool's Sadio Mane and Manchester United's Cristiano Ronaldo alongside Bruno Fernandes, because they seem to have booked their place on the plane to Qatar. Also, Jude Bellingham might be in for that as well. One player who will not be at the biggest football tournament of them all, though, is Mo Salah, who's probably woken up today not celebrating but wearing sunglasses after the amount of laser pointers he faced during a penalty shootout. It was a carbon copy of the African Nations Cup, and once again, Senegal came out on top. And another Premier League star is big news as well. Christian Eriksen has done it again, returning to the stadium where he collapsed during the Euros to show he really is back to his best, scoring in Denmark's win over Serbia. So there's a lot to talk about, and it's not going to be just me this morning. I'm joined by a couple of friends from the Football Social Daily family. They include Manchester United fan Joel Tudor.
Good morning, guys.
And a rather under the weather Marley Anderson. Good morning, Marley.
Good morning. How are you? Better than me, I suppose.
Yeah. Have you got a Lemsip handy to get you through?
I've currently got a brew, but the Lemsip could be coming out later, and the day nurse and the night nurse, as I've successfully avoided COVID for 2 years, but now it feels like it's gripped me by the throat. But we'll have to see what the test says later.
For those of you listening outside the UK, I may have to explain Lemsip and brew, but I'll do that later because we've got a lot of football news to get through. So let's start with England. It was a much changed lineup again as England cruised past 10-man Ivory Coast. They weren't 10-man for the whole game. It was just about 5 minutes before half-time. Serge Aurier, the former Tottenham player, got himself sent off. A little bit of trivia for you now. Serge Aurier has now been sent off in every stadium that Tottenham have played in at home.
Wow, that is a stat.
although he did scupper one record, because I think he'd never lost playing at the London Stadium or Wembley. Of course, while Spurs' new stadium was in development, Serge was at Tottenham, and they used Wembley as their home games for about half a season. So let's look at the game now away from that. Let's look at England. It's a very difficult night for Harry Maguire. We'll come and talk about that in a moment. But let's focus on the actual performance. As I say, going into the game, They have some very talented players in the Ivory Coast squad, but that was very much nullified by England. Joel, who stood out for you in terms of the three Lions?
I would say
that
two stood out for me. I know I'm going away from your question, but I thought the two that were the kind of ones that really made the mark, Jude Bellingham, I think, was one of them. I think in a year, compared to what he looks like in the last Euros, whenever he made a couple of cameo performances, he just looked way, way much more like a bit of a man in that midfield now, rather than before. To be fair, even still, I mean, at Dortmund, he's been playing in that first team since he was, what, 19, 18 now. But I thought in that game, he just looked super composed and very comfortable and really made it his own. He didn't look lost in that midfield, which sometimes you would think a player of his age, he might need someone who has a bit more experience next to him, but he looks very comfortable. And then as I've been saying, though, I feel like he can easily take that place of Calvin Phillips as well, considering he's literally not played all season. And I think Bellingham absolutely deserves to take his place, and judging off that performance yesterday, which of course the game was a little bit skewed because they were down to 10 men pretty early, which was a bit bad for the whole experience of watching it. But and I also thought Sterling was just an absolute live wire all game. He seems to just become a different player in England. Not to say that he's bad for City, but I mean, for England, he just seems to have a little bit more freedom on the ball and like a bit of a more of a free roam role, whereas Pep's system's a little bit, you know, he has his role and he stick to it a little bit more. But I thought those two players really stood out for me, and obviously them two are pretty much guaranteed sure starters to be able to be in the England squad. But yeah, like I say, the game was just a little bit skewed just because of the fact that after 10 men in what, the 35th minute, I even saw Jack Grealish complaining to the referee that he didn't want him to give a red card because it was going to change the whole game again and make it a bit of a backs against the wall for the Ivory Coast. So it was a bit of a strange game, but yeah, I'd say those two for me were the ones that really made their mark against 10 men.
Yeah, it's been a long time since I've seen an opposition player complain about a red card. One of the questions that was put to Southgate before this game, Marley, was the potential of running a Manchester City front line with this kind of false nine using Phil Foden. And actually, in the game last night, you did have Sterling set up by Jack Grealish. The potential there for that Manchester City front three is an option which we haven't seen at England so far. But last night we saw that obviously the ingredients are all there and it can work at that level. But Southgate has been very keen to look at straight alternatives to Harry Kane. And obviously Tammy Abraham is somebody who's been mentioned, had not really had the chance to sort of join the squad and show what he can do. And so we saw Ollie Watkins last night, who basically did all that you can do in that position if you're given the chance. He got the opportunity and he took a goal. But do you think he's not had the best season at Aston Villa this year, but do you think he's done enough to keep him in Gareth Southgate's thoughts?
Yeah, I think he'll be in and around the squad. It depends on who's available in December, I suppose, because I think there's a couple of players ahead of him. You know, I think Abraham's probably the backup, the number one sort of alternative to Kane, and even Calvert-Lewin, if he gets a move in the summer and starts next season well, or if he stays at Everton and they start the season all right. Well, he does anyway. Everton probably won't, but he might. I think they're probably ahead of him in terms of centre forward, because I think he's more sort of playing from a wing in Villa's team now with Danny Ings down the middle. So I think if he was to get in on that form, I think there's better players who would play. I think the role he's going to play for England would be down the middle, and I think there's way more players out wide. So he wouldn't play out wide if the squad was picked like tomorrow, I don't think, because England have got an absolute, you know, who's who of wingers. There's loads of them. There's even quality ones not in the squad, like Harvey Barnes, for example, is playing out his skin at Leicester, but can't get in the squad, and that just shows the depth England have got. So I think with Watkins, he'll always offer you something, because he's fast. And England, thinking about who England have got as really fast mobile strikers, and I don't think there's that many. Off the top of my head, they tend to be sort of more centre forwardish and like comfortable with the back to goal, good in the air type of thing. So it just depends, really. You know, 8 months' time, a lot of football to be played by then. If he's banging the minute at Aston Villa or wherever he might be, then, you know, he's definitely got a chance, because he's not done anything wrong in his time. He played quite well last night. I thought he could have been better with his sort of link-up play and his sort of, like, playing the final third type of thing. But, you know, got himself a goal, and that will sort of give him confidence to go on into the games in June and then the games next season ahead of the final squad being selected in November.
Tyrone Mings had a good game as well, popping up with a goal right at the end, and of course a clean sheet, so a very good game as far as defenders concerned. But up till now he's very much been sort of the second choice of centre-backs, and you would have to look at somebody sort of stepping down or falling out of that first choice favour, which means there's always going to be a lot of pressure, and more pressure than usual for Harry Maguire last night. Not only did he see Sterling take the captain's armband, put in a great performance and score, but he found himself booed rather heavily by his own fans. First of all, when his name was read out in terms of the lineup, which is never a good sign, and secondly, on his very first touch, and though there was sort of pockets of the fans that were trying to sort of show their support for him, it's not gone down well. And after the game, Southgate's come out and talked about it, that the players have rallied around as well. Jordan Henderson and Declan Rice and Jack Grealish have all come out and been very vocal in their support of Harry Maguire. But I'm going to put this one to you, Joel, actually, as a Man United fan. You've seen Harry play more than probably either me or Marley. It kind of reminds me a little bit of another United player who had a very high-profile time with England, who was booed by fans, and even at one stage I think they were burning effigies of David Beckham. Do you think that this is something that Maguire can come back from and actually will be really character building? Because I think, using that comparison of David Beckham, we really saw another element of Beckham post that sending off against Argentina in 98.
Well, I guess, yeah, this is what I mean. With the Beckham situation, I'm not saying it was justified, but it was in reaction to him getting a red card, so at least he had something to boo and do all that crazy stuff about. Not that I'm condoning it, because it was a bit ridiculous, but in the case of Maguire, it was just, when I heard it, I was thinking to myself, what's the reason for it? Because it's not even the fact that he's been playing bad for England, that they were booing the fact that, well, the only two reasons I can think of is, one, that they don't agree with the fact that he's been called up because he's been bad for United this season, and two, the fact that he's playing for England. But I mean, if you're 9 months away from a World Cup, I don't understand why you'd want to boo one of your own international players, considering the fact that for the last 4 years, in 2018 and in 2021, for both tournaments, he's been pretty colossal for England. He only recently got into the Euro team of the tournament in the last summer, and along with Luke Shaw as well, who hasn't had his finest season. So for me, it was just a bit strange, and I can understand why Southgate and all of the players have come out and kind of leaped to his defence, because he hasn't put a foot wrong for England at all, to be honest. They're literally booing on the basis of him playing bad for a team that majority of those booers don't even support. It's not logical at all. It makes zero sense to me, but you can guarantee that if he was to score the winner in a semi-final in 9 months' time, you won't hear any of them. So football is a very fickle sport, and it's just very strange to me how it was so close to the finals as well. But yeah, you know what? People are entitled to their own opinion, but I think Southgate is very protective of the harmony and the connection between the fans and the actual national team, because as we've seen, for the last two decades, pretty much, it's been very cold, and I don't think the fans have even enjoyed watching England from prior to Southgate's arrival, just because it just seemed like there was a bunch of players who played amazingly for their club, and then when they came for their country, they would just be an absolute shell of themselves, whereas the opposite has happened here in this case, where Maguire actually really comes out of his shell when he plays for England, and he loves playing for England, and yet fans still want to try and like tear down his character. It's become a bit of a character assassination for me, where they're just trying to continue this bit of, I think it's a bit of a sheep mentality in my opinion. So yeah, it's a strange one, and of course he will get picked, and it is strange as well that, you know, Southgate does pick people who he trusts rather than based off their club form. But again, you can only say that he does well for England. I wouldn't know who I would pick ahead of him, because he does fit that system so well under Southgate, and that's the reason he picks him consistently.
Mally, I'm thinking of Jordan Pickford a little bit here, because there's been a lot of shouts for Pickford to be sort of, you know, drop down and give Henderson a chance, or to give Nick Pope a chance. And, you know, Pickford's not had, you know, not in a great side at the minute. He's behind a very leaky defence. And yet Southgate's shown real faith with him. And particularly in the performance we saw against Switzerland, we saw Pickford at his best, really. Do you think that in this situation where, you know, you've got this sense of, like, you're not having a great season at your club, and you find yourself being berated by your own supporters at international level, how valuable is that support from Southgate going to be?
I think it's very valuable. I think if you're a player and you know the manager respects you and has your back in most situations, you know, that can only give you confidence. And you know, just thinking about the Maguire thing, I'm glad Joel said the word sheep, because it was the exact word that was on my mind about this whole thing. Like, the England fans as England fans have no issue with Harry Maguire. They have no reason to have an issue, but they see Man United getting tetchy every week and saying, oh, Maguire's not playing well, what's he doing in our team, we should be winning the league and blah blah blah, and we should be better than we are and all the rest of it. And then they see Man United fans booing, and they go, right, well we must have to boo him as well. Yeah, we'll boo him, yeah. And, you know, England had, what, 70% possession against Ivory Coast, an absolute walk in the park thanks to Serge Aurier's stupidity at getting somehow sent off in a friendly. And then, you know, Maguire didn't put a foot wrong. He didn't even have the opportunity to put a foot wrong, because it was that easy a game. And then you get the fans booing, and it just makes no sense. Because if there's a problem with a player, like, I understand, like, booing players is part of the game. For example, booing Kurt Zouma is absolutely understandable, because he did something wrong in his personal life. So whoever you are, people are gonna not like him for that. There's countless, you know, other examples of players doing things wrong and that people don't like, and then getting booed for it. But, you know, playing slightly badly for Man United is not a reason to boo a player when he pulls on an England shirt. It makes zero sense to me. Absolutely no sense at all. So to sit there and pay, I don't know how much it is to go and watch England, but it's too bloody much. And travel to London if that's what you've done, or even, you know, just travel across London to get to Wembley, and then to sit there and boo Harry Maguire is bizarre to me. It doesn't matter how he's playing for Man United. Judge him. You're an England fan. You're not there to support Man United. You're not there just to support the Man United players. If you are a Man United fan, so, you know, what's he done wrong for England that requires you to sit there, you know, with your belly hanging over your jeans and, you know, your expert perfect opinion on how footballers should be in certain situations, when you've got no understanding of the situation? He's done very, very little wrong. Man United as a team are playing poorly. I don't think it could be squared on Harry Maguire at all. But that's another issue. It's not England. It's not there to be made fun of when he's pulled out an England shirt and he's kept a clean sheet in a routine, easy, nice, easy win for England.
Yeah, I was thinking of the quote. I can't remember which manager said it. He said, you know, when they boo you, that means, you know, you're doing well. But that's when the opposition fans boo you, not your own fans. I really liked what Roy Keane said, which I can't believe I've just said out loud. But afterwards, Roy Keane said he thought that Southgate turned it into a bigger story than what it was. Every player gets booed, and there's going to be idiots at football matches.
That just sums up the difference between Roy Keane and Gareth Southgate as a manager. You know, who would you rather play for? Would you rather play for Gareth Southgate, who's going to say, you know, that this isn't right? Or would you rather play for Roy Keane, who's barely had a job in management because of his way of, you know, managing and, oh, get on with it, blah, blah, blah. You know, who would you rather play for? I mean, it's simple to me.
I mean, I'll be honest right now, I'd play for either of them if I got the chance. Before we leave England, let's move ahead to look at the other teams that have booked their place to Qatar. I just want to bestow upon you both the power to allocate a guaranteed seat on the plane to Qatar with England. You've got one seat, one player. Who are you making sure is going to be going out to the World Cup for England? Joel?
I would repeat what I said at the start. Apart from obviously Sterling, who's a sure fit, I think Bellingham is a player who I think will have a way much more bigger impact on this tournament compared to the last one. I don't think he was quite ready in the Euros, but this time he's literally got a free route into that midfield, considering Calvin Phillips has literally barely played this season. So I would definitely say him, and the fact that he has such a massive hand in Dortmund's season, every single season now, and he's become pretty much one of the senior players in their midfield and in their entire squad. I think he's someone who should definitely start for me if things continue and Calvin Phillips doesn't pick up that form that Southgate chose him for last summer.
Yeah, I mean, this almost feels like an obvious thing, but also quite controversial given how, you know, integral he was. But actually what I'm taking from this is how much depth that we have in terms of England selection at the moment. Marley, who's your golden ticket going to?
I love that you've mentioned the depth we've got there, and we still ended up with Ben White playing right back all night.
But the thing is, the problem is not that we've not got enough right backs. It's just that we can't choose between the 47 that are available.
I think one of our best right backs was qualifying for Poland last night with Matty Cash booking his ticket to the World Cup. But yeah, I don't know. In terms of, I think the squad's pretty much picked. To be fair, I don't think there's that many places up for grabs. But I would probably echo what Joel said. I think Bellingham was brilliant last night, and he didn't get much of a chance in the Euros, but when he did get on the pitch, he was really bright. And I think he does get slightly overlooked by England because of his age. And I think Southgate has slight reservations because he thinks, I'll ease him in, I'll give him the easy games, and I'd like to see him play in a midfield three in a big game for England with sort of three in midfield and three up front. And I'd like to see him go box to box with two guys alongside him, Rice and one more. So I think he's coming on really good. I think, you know, he bossed the game last night. He was the best player on the pitch by a mile. And I think he sometimes gets held back by just his age. And people think, oh well, there's more to come from him. But like, he's pretty much a finished article now, as Joel said. He's in the Dortmund team every week. He's one of the main men. He's one of the string pullers in that midfield. So I'd like to see him play a little bit more than he did in the Euros when the World Cup rolls around in, you know, 7 or 8 months' time.
Yeah, and the exciting thing is as well, you know, Jude Bellingham is a player that we could see, you know, at two or three different World Cups moving forward, which is very exciting. Let's pause it there, and we will come back in a moment. And have you guys got your wall charts yet for the World Cup?
Mine's on print now.
Well, I'll give you a minute to print that out, and then we'll come back.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky?
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello and welcome back to the Football Social Daily. My name is Zach McGinley. Joel Tudor and Marley Anderson are with me. And the boys have been printing out their Football World Cup FIFA 2022 in Qatar wall charts as we look ahead to Friday. Yes, on Friday they will be drawing out the groups to see who will be playing who. Big games happened last night. We had some big teams go through, some big teams missing out. But it looks like pot one, which England find themselves in, alongside Qatar, Brazil, Belgium, France, Argentina, and Portugal, which means they can't get any of those teams in their group. However, pot two, I think they're going to get one of either Netherlands, Germany, Switzerland, Croatia, Denmark, or Uruguay. Out of those, Marley, which would you want to avoid the most?
To avoid what, from pot two? To be honest, I'm not that scared of any of them. I would probably, historically, I would say Germany, but we absolutely pasted them in the Euros. And their squad isn't that much like different or anything like that from when we played them there. And Holland are managed by Van Gaal, so the biggest danger there is just falling asleep and conceding a goal because his teams are that boring. So I'm not really that bothered about them. I think the big hitters that you want to miss are, you know, the likes of Spain and Brazil and Argentina sort of thing. So I think with Holland and Germany as the big standouts, I'd probably maybe just pick Germany just for the historical thing and their talent, and you'd probably not like to play them. But with the rest of the teams in it, you know, you should be qualifying anyway, so regardless of who you play.
I'd throw Denmark into the hat there, because the last couple of times England have played them, it's not been the easiest team to overcome. Any different for you, Joel?
Aside from Germany, who are kind of, I think they've got a much more exciting and younger team this time round, but I think Switzerland are ones that always go off everyone's radar, but they put out France in the Euros last year. They finished top of their group ahead of Italy, which inevitably ended up knocking Italy out of the tournament and out of the World Cup, pretty much, the finals. They have got a pretty good, young, exciting side, Switzerland. I don't think it'd be too much trouble for the England side, but I feel like they're always that dark horse in every tournament. Not to say they're going to go super far, but they always end up pulling out some kind of result. Every single time I've watched a major tournament, I swear Switzerland, I remember when they beat Spain, I think was it in the 2012 tournament, where Johan Giroud scored the goal. It was, I think, a 1-0 win. And every single time they always just pull out some kind of victory. So yeah, I'm not a massive fan of their team. So I think I'd want to avoid them. They're a bit of a giant killer.
So the draw takes place on Friday for the group stages of the Qatar World Cup. Portugal, Senegal and Poland all secured themselves places in the draw, which is great because it means that we will be seeing Ronaldo for one last time, possibly on the global stage, alongside Sadio Mane and Robert Lewandowski. However, due to the way the results went last night, it does mean that we're not going to see Ibrahimovic at another World Cup, or potentially the current potential World Player of the Year, Mo Salah. He was knocked out in a replay, a carbon copy of the African Nation Cups final, actually. In terms of that, is this a bad thing? I mean, obviously it's a bad thing for Mo Salah, but for the neutrals, for the tournament as a whole, you know, is this an argument for what FIFA are planning to do with expanding the World Cup to 48 teams? We've only got 32 teams in, I say only, 32 teams go into the tournament in Qatar. Surely, you know, it's the greatest show of football. You want the best players to be there. Of course, over the years, there's been lots of amazing footballers that we've had who just never made an appearance on that global stage. But, you know, Marley, do you think this is, you know, something that is a positive of them expanding the tournament to 48? Or does that just take away all the meaning and the excitement of actually having qualified for it?
I feel like it's a bit of a problem. Like now, thinking about it, and you think, oh God, what, 46 teams? But ultimately, when you get there, it's more football. Like, no one's going to not watch the World Cup because there's too many teams in it. Like, no one's that hard-headed and morally driven that, no, there should never be more than 32 teams in it, so I'm not going to watch it. So, you know, people are going to still watch. And I do feel like some of the qualifying is harsh. For example, like, there was a lot of good African teams in the playoffs. I think we mentioned it yesterday, Nigeria against Ghana, Senegal against Egypt. You know, I think three of them were in the four. The last four of the African nations, you know, 2 months ago. So you look at that, and I think it ultimately comes down to look at like the likes of Qatar, who are getting in it, and that's where the frustration comes from. You look at the four North American teams who get qualification opportunities, like, you know, USA, Canada, and Mexico are probably the three standouts, but then you get Honduras or a Panama or someone like that, and then they end up taking the place. And then you look at who Panama have got compared to Egypt, and they're leaving Mo Salah at home, for example. Or you look at Nigeria, and there's a bunch of good players playing for Nigeria who aren't going to get there. And I think that's where the frustration comes from. But it's just how it goes, isn't it? You know, everybody gets a chance to qualify. This is the rules. You know, that's just the way it is. It's the way the cookie crumbles type of thing. So it's tough for Salah, but ultimately Egypt are pretty much a one-man team. You know, they've got Salah, and they've not got enough elsewhere. Whereas Senegal beat them last night. They've got Mane, they've got Edouard Mendy, one of the best goalies in the world. They've got Koulibaly at centre-back, one of the best centre-backs in the world. And they've got Premier League and top-flight players all over the pitch. So ultimately, that's what it comes down to. And you can't just rely on Mo Salah or a penalty shootout to get you to a World Cup.
From a Liverpool point of view, if they sort of manage to secure him, because I know that's still sort of being debated at the moment, this is a great thing for Liverpool if they keep Mo Salah on, and you have that mid-season break around Christmas, later this year in next season. It just means that, you know, one of their key players is going to be super fit, super relaxed, not tired. I bet you'll love that as a United fan, Joel.
He might not even be there considering this contract scenario going on. But to be honest, I'd expect Egypt to be going out of the group stages regardless, so I don't think he would have been there for too long. Like they did in the 2018 Russia World Cup, they absolutely were awful. So I don't think they would have been a massive miss anyway. He would have been strolling around the pitch, not really getting many chances. But yeah, you know, with these kind of players like Salah and Ibrahimovic, the players who... they're not going to light it up as much as we thought. Like, in practice, they're not going to be as good as how we think it would be. I mean, Ibrahimovic, he's played in the 2002 World Cup and the 2006 World Cup, and they were the last ones he played in, and he's not scored a single goal. And then since then, he's just been in the Euros because Sweden haven't been able to qualify for any of the World Cups since. And then with Salah, again, as Marley said, if he maybe had some extra firepower in that team, like another winger who was on the world stage, then maybe, you know, it takes the pressure off him and it makes Egypt a better side. But it's the fact that he is to Egypt what, like, Shevchenko was to Ukraine. They relied on him for the goals and getting him out of tight situations. So I don't think he's going to be a player that's going to be missed in the World Cup. Neither of them will be, I don't think. And I think the fact that, you know, Lewandowski's still definitely in his prime. And that Poland side have definitely got a better chance of going way further than Sweden or Egypt. So, yeah, I think the right thing has happened, to be honest. And everyone wants to see Ronaldo back in a World Cup again just because, isn't it? I mean, if Messi's there, Ronaldo's got to be there. So it's going to be interesting. I just pray to God that Argentina and Portugal get drawn together. I can't even remember the last time they played each other. But, like, you know, again, as Marley said as well, it's the fact that, you know, these teams like Honduras and Panama and Costa Rica and all these teams that you don't really hear of, they're teams where England will play them probably once every 30 years or something like that. It's so rare. So I think with the World Cup, it's okay to expand the tournament because there's so many worldwide teams. Whereas in the Euros, if you remember in Euro 2016, they changed the rules where the third place were going to a playoff to then go into the knockouts, and it just diluted the quality so badly. to the point where it was like unnecessary to include these sides. So I think with the World Cup, it's safe to expand it. But with the Euros, there's just not enough teams and enough quality to actually do that. So I'd welcome it, to be honest. I love seeing these kind of smaller teams and having a crack at trying to get through the World Cup and just enjoying it. So now it's a good spectacle for all these teams.
Yeah, and I think the thing really is, obviously, we're going to miss Mo Salah, and it would have been great to see Ibrahimovic, even though he was just on the fringes of the Sweden team again. But I don't think there's ever been a World Cup where you haven't had a breakthrough star. You know, this is part of the thing, you know, by not having these players there. And sometimes these players come along and they do make it to the final, but then they get injured and they miss out, and it's somebody else that steps in. For example, you know, you only have to go back to England and their one World Cup success. Jimmy Greaves was the man going into that tournament. And you know,
you're showing your age, yeah.
But it was, you know, Jeff Hurst that came in for him. That's, you know, it became the legend on the back of that. Personally, the one that really stands out, that had the biggest impression, my first World Cup experience was 1990, and Roger Miller for Cameroon. You know, that was a player that, you know, nobody had really heard of outside of Cameroon. You know, he was 40, I think, at the time, maybe 41, and became an absolute star. And this happens, you know. So while we won't have Mo Salah, we are going to have other players that come through. For you, are the players that pop into your mind in terms of, you know, World Cups that have suddenly just popped onto your radar and the world's radar and become a star?
Well, firstly, I can't believe that you didn't know Roger Miller before the 1990 tournament, because he played for the powerhouses that were Cameroonian side Tonnerre Kalara Club of Yaoundé, where he'd scored 89 goals in 116 games, according to Wikipedia. So
sensational knowledge, Marley.
You should have known this, Andy. You should have known this. But yeah, you know, it is one of the good things, isn't it? I remember watching. I think it was the 2008 World Cup. No, 2006 World Cup, sorry, where Miroslav Klose came along, and I think he scored about 8 goals or something
I think 6 in one game, wasn't it, or something crazy?
Yeah, it was madness. And it was like the breakout star type of thing that you know that you're talking about. It's, you know, players announced themselves, and you know, nobody really knew Miroslav Klose before that, but he ended up going on and being the World Cup top scorer for a long time until fairly recently. So yeah, it's just one of them things where, because the world's watching, you know, I mean, how many players do you see turn into completely new players when the World Cup comes on, and then they get signed by a team and they end up being crap week in, week out? Like Moussa Sissoko is the absolute epitome of that example with France. He used to look like absolutely insane in European Championships and World Cups, come back to Newcastle and stink the place out every few months. So in the end, we ended up selling him to Spurs for 30 million off the back of it. So long may that continue in terms of playing out your skin in a big tournament. So it's just that's the carrot in front of everyone. You're on the world stage, and if you can chase that carrot on the stick type of thing, and you know, you've got what, 3 games to prove you've got one big move in you, and it can change your career and change the way, you know, you're sort of viewed in the world's game type of thing.
Yeah, other players that stand out for me from the World Cup that have really sort of announced themselves, Valencia, who of course went on to Man United in Germany 2006, James Rodriguez,
big player,
with great performance in Brazil in 2010, and who can forget in Russia 2018, Eric Dier. So before we move on, I just want to talk about the penalty shootout, and a lot of social media going around, a lot of images. Very hard to even see the official images of this without the green lasers. But as Mo Salah steps up to take the first penalty, which he missed, there's about it looks like he's got a whole SWAT team pointing guns at him. Now, of course, we've seen this previously in the Euros last year. England against Denmark, Schmeichel had a laser pointer going across his eyes. I'm just obviously this is a thing that I don't know. We've heard cases of it happening at sort of a domestic level as well, but I'm just stumped as to how we actually stop this from happening without kind of because these laser pointers are so small. It's very easy if somebody wanted to bring this in and use that. it's very easy to do, and it's very difficult to trace where it's actually come from in terms of the cameras. So in short of, you know, putting some kind of barrier behind the goal, which defeats the whole point of having fans there to watch the game, I'm not really sure what we can do to solve this, because I'm not sure it's something that the referee's potentially aware of when the penalty's been taken. With VAR, perhaps we can go back and do it, but then what's to stop it just happening again if we retake it? So this is something of a just throwing it out there. Any ideas or suggestions of how we solve this issue?
I would think about, you know when teams are warming up and they put the nets up behind the goal, so if the you know, the crowd doesn't get absolutely nailed by stray shots from footballers. I think if you put one of those nets up, it would be very hard to get a laser pen pointed through some of the mesh into the player's eyes. So maybe that could be something. The obvious thing is to search people on the way in and say, have you got a laser pen, and, you know, whatever, and
get to be honest, Marley, with the amount of lasers, I think they were just handing them out.
You probably got you buy a pint at half time and you get a free laser pen with it or something.
You should get it instead of being green, you get it in your club colours. I wonder if there's possibly some kind of, like, I'm thinking of, you know, Edgar Davids used to play in those glasses to correct that vision problem he had. You know, potentially we're going to see this thing where somebody will develop a pair of sunglasses that cancels out the laser, and so it's going to be like every time you step up to take a penalty, it'll be like you're doing 3D or VR before you go in. But there you go, that's something. Unfortunately, it looks like it's going to be a problem that will rear its head again. Let's pause things there and we will come back in a moment and look at what is possibly the signing of the season, who scored again last night on international duty.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Welcome back to part three of the Football Social Daily. Ant McGinley, Joel Tudor and Marley Anderson in attendance. So, last summer, the eyes of the world were on the European Championships, and we all watched on with horror as Christian Eriksen took to the field in Copenhagen, and during that game against Finland, well, we all know what happened there. Well, last night, he returned for the first time to that stadium with the Danish team. And following on the back of his goal on Saturday, he scored once again. So showing that he's back to full fitness, definitely back to his best that we've seen him at before. And this now points towards what could possibly be the shrewdest signing of the season. And if he can maintain that form, or even a percentage of that form, when he goes back to Brentford, that is surely going to put them in a really good position in the last few games and their attempts to stay in the Premier League.
Yeah, I agree with you completely. I think let's not forget, Eriksen is still a top level player, and the only reason he had to leave Inter Milan was because the fact that Italy doesn't allow players to wear the defibrillator devices in Serie A. So if that wasn't the case, he would probably still be playing for Inter Milan and still playing at the top level, still playing for the Scudetto and all of the trophies that they play for. I think most clubs, and I'm surprised that a lot more clubs weren't in for him, because it's the fact that I'm sure they were quite scared that they would have to invest in someone who potentially may have, you know, health issues, and it's a big investment, of course, but it's the fact that, you know, I didn't realise how quickly he would come back, and I also didn't realise how quickly he would begin to show what he showed prior to that incident. Of course, I thought that he would maybe take his foot off the gas a little bit on the pitch, or he would be a little bit hesitant when playing, but it seems to me as though he's really beginning to just come back into his own again, and as everyone remembered him as prior to that incident. So, I mean, for Brentford, you've got to say fair play to them, because they were the only club who were willing to take, I want to say, a risk in a way, but it's not really a risk if the health all the doctors, he's had the best doctors, the best health healthcare around him have said he's clear to play. So he shouldn't really be that much of a risk by doing that. But fair play to Brentford for actually taking that step and letting him have another chance at the top level in the Premier League, because it's looking like it's turning out to be one of the better signings from any club in January. But again, I also wonder as well, because I think he's only a short-term contract, isn't it? So maybe in the summer, it's hard to gauge what kind of club he may want to go on to, whether he wants to play at an even better level or for a better club. But right now, I think it's just working perfectly for him. They can just be back on the football pitch again. And yeah, again, credit to Brentford for actually giving him the chance, because not a lot of other clubs wanted to do that, clearly.
I mean, we all held our breath watching the scenes play out last summer. And I've got to be honest, I did that myself when I heard that he was going to be back playing in the Premier League, because you know, my thought was, you know, I really hope that he's all right and he's going to be okay. And the thing is, like, having watched him play now, I mean, I don't want to trivialise it, but he seems to have come back stronger than most players do after a hamstring injury. I mean, it is really incredible, whether that's down to the skill of the technicians or the surgeons that were involved in doing this, or the staff that are around in the medical staff, the programme. But it is an absolute joy to see. And I suppose at this point, I've got to ask Newcastle fan Marley Anderson, how much will the Magpies be bidding for him in the summer?
Well, he's on a free, isn't he? So we'll lure him up to Newcastle and the promise of some nice bridges and stuff. Yeah, we'll have him. But now he's quality, isn't he? I think we do forget what good player, like how good a player he was before the incident in the summer. So you know, he was at Inter. He had a tough time at Inter, to be fair, but it was a new system and a new country for him, and it was hard for him to adapt. But you know, since coming back into the Premier League and having a team built around him, like Brentford are doing, you know, playing him in his best position and showing him some love, the relationship between him and Thomas Frank is obviously one that goes back a long, long way. So it's like what I said before, you know, when a manager loves you and he's got your back, you know, you don't feel the pressure. And you don't feel as though you're sort of fighting to prove yourself type of thing. But when you've got the quality Christian Eriksen always has had, then you know if you get the best out of him, you've got a hell of a player there. And I think Brentford are reaping the rewards of that, because they've picked up some big results recently, and that looks to have kept them safe.
Now let's just look at this kind of thing comes up all the time after somebody puts in a good performance, but a bit of transfer gossip, which is quite nice and also quite potential. Real Madrid have identified Borussia Dortmund and England midfielder Jude Bellingham as a target, even though Liverpool are also looking at him as well. I mean, if you look at him, we mentioned him in the first part. He's still a teenager, still a young teenager at that as well. He's got the experience of playing in the Championship with Birmingham. He's now got a couple of seasons under his belt in Germany in the Bundesliga. I mean, potentially what we're looking at here is an English player who could be in the, you know, even before they're 20, with experience of playing in two foreign leagues, which is pretty much unheard of at the moment. But again, in terms of how we've seen him grow and develop already, you know, I think, Joel, I know you're quite, as a United fan, you're not the biggest fan of Liverpool. I think that's the last place you'd want to see him to go to. But, I mean, do you think in terms of his development as a player, do you think sort of going to La Liga is something that's really going to push him forward? Or would you like to see him now? You know, he's already proved himself. He's been in Germany, now taking the opportunity and coming to the Premier League.
Well, to be honest, I literally forgot that he's only 18. I was thinking he was like 22 or something, considering how kind of mature he plays in the way he speaks as well. So for me, I think, well, he's literally lived the most dreamlike football story so far, of like being in the trenches of Birmingham and then going to Borussia Dortmund, getting into a Euro squad, playing in the Champions League, now getting called, probably called up to the World Cup squad, all at the age of 18. It's like it's like how meteoric the rise was of Rooney. Not to say that their careers are going to be similar or that they are similar quality, because Rooney was just a different stratosphere at that age. But I mean, you can't really say that there's much difference. I mean, Bellingham's been playing at the top level now for the last 2 years. So for me, I don't think there should be any rush in him trying to move on. Because at 18, you're playing in a Champions League team, one of the best teams in Europe, amazing fan base, and they're always trying to compete for the Bundesliga. Of course, he'll look around at the Dortmund team and he'll see that Sancho's left at 21. Then you'll see that Haaland, he's gonna leave this summer at 21, 22. So for me, I just don't think there's any rush. I feel like he should still keep developing there for a couple of years and not run the risk of leaving too soon. He goes to a much more high pace, high quality league. Not to say that he wouldn't be able to match the pace, but for a player who's very young, I feel like you have to still be careful, because the Bundesliga is a very different level compared to the Premier League. As we've seen with many players from the Bundesliga who've come over to England, it takes them quite a long time to adapt. As we've seen, you know, Jadon Sancho, Kai Havertz, even Werner, who's still finding his feet, and he was pretty much a seasoned goal scorer in the Bundesliga. So I feel as though in the best interest of his career, there's no rush at all. I feel like he should still keep maturing, developing. It might even end up becoming Dortmund captain. You never know, because Hummels is slowly going to be on his way out. So I think he's in the best place for his development. And as we saw with Sancho, he only stayed there he arrived at 17 and stayed there until he was 21. And I think he left at the perfect time. So I think Bellingham is in the right place at the right time, and just allow his stock to continue to rise, to be honest.
Birmingham City, where he came from, they knew what they had in him. When he left at 16, they actually retired his shirt number. I really do hope that they have a sell-on clause and get a percentage of any fee that comes from him in the future. Speaking of which, Newcastle fan Marley Anderson, how much will Newcastle bid for Jude Bellingham in the summer?
Hopefully all the tea in China, because the kid is absolutely mint. He's so good. Hopefully 200 million. Let's just blow everyone out of the water. Let's cut to the chase and just have him in the Newcastle number 22 shirt, and we'll retire that in a few years when we inevitably sell him to Real Madrid or Barcelona.
Well, there you go. You heard it here first. Thank you very much for joining us today, Joel and Marley. Thank you. I will be back tomorrow for another dose of daily action as we start to turn our head towards another round of Premier League fixtures coming up this weekend, and also we will have one eye on that World Cup draw taking place on Friday. Thanks very much for joining us today, and do remember to give us a follow and leave us a nice review as well. Thank you very much.